And now, with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved, here is Dr. James Houck.
Well, hello, hello again, everybody. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity. Good afternoon, 3 o'clock, right on the dot. Here we are, August 27th. I don't know where, you know, your thoughts are on all this, but where in the world did August go? I just don't know. I mean, it just kind of flew by, just like the month of July flew by for me. But next weekend will be, you know, in Labor Day weekend. And then from there, you know, like I'd say most of the kids are going back to school, and they are somewhat mixed emotions, and the ones that I've been talking to anyway. Some are excited to go back in person. Hopefully they can stay in person. And some are just going to be kicking and screaming and dragging their feet with every step. But they'll get back into a routine. And then, like I said, hopefully they'll be able to be back in person. Okay. Well, again, good afternoon, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. I am Dr. James Houck. And if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about today's show, I just invite you to visit the website. That is www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. So again, that is www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And just in case you want to go back and listen again to this broadcast, or you're not able to stay with me for the full hour, you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows, because these broadcasts are now in podcast form. And so I just wanted to thank you for the people who have been doing that, and just appreciate your support in this. So again, I just wanted to say that, you know, there's other ways that you can show your support through this radio broadcast. So you can become a monthly subscriber. Now, as with most radio stations, or let's say even TV spots, or people who do podcasts, you know, getting a prescription means that you're not allowed to access shows until you pay that fee. And well, this is not the case with my podcast. There is no subscription that is required to listen to the talk shows, but it is greatly appreciated. So again, all you would need to do is just go on to the website itself, click on the link at the top, and choose any amount that you feel comfortable. Well, I am very excited to be with you here today, every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time, and any other time in between, because each and every week, these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of our spirituality and our mental health. And if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. Again, it's 888-627-6008. And I would really love to get your insights, opinions, and so forth, as we're going to be talking about today, the quenching of the soul with the light of water. The quenching of our soul with the light, L-I-G-H-T, of water. So again, just invite you to call in, and I'll be taking your calls after the break. And for those who will be tuning in for the very first time, just welcome aboard, I'll just say. And in case you're wondering what Reclaiming Authenticity is all about, I'll put it to you this way, that pretty much Reclaiming Authenticity focuses on the integration of spirituality and our mental health, all within the context of our relationships, the relationships that we have with ourselves, the relationship that we have with others, and the relationship that we have with God or the divine. And I just wanted to share with perhaps people tuning in for the first time that I am a firm believer that all of us do come into this world already equipped and graced with everything we need for this life, especially in terms of our giftedness or our skills, our talents, our strengths, character traits, graces, all that stuff. The very, very best parts of who we are. And yet, there's sometimes that as we go along in life, and maybe due to some unpleasant experiences, we may feel like we need to, shall we say, hide our giftedness. Or, you know, perhaps we've allowed our skills to come out at some point, or our talents, or even our character traits, and it was ridiculed. And so we tend to hide the very best parts from others so that they cannot see it because of the way they were exploited in the past. Or even, again, people I talk to, they know that they are the gifted and they have the very best parts of themselves just waiting to be discovered. But as they were growing up, they were told that they would never amount to anything, or there was really nothing special to them, or that they were backward or shy or something, or whatever other voice, you know, they heard telling them that there was really nothing, you know, unique. There was nothing special to them. Well, at any rate, when this occurs, we don't realize our giftedness. In fact, we stop looking for even more the very best parts of ourselves. And we go through life often functioning from a place of woundedness or, just playing over and over again the part of the victim. Or just putting ourselves in situations where it's easy to, you know, just embrace victimization, okay? And again, when we put this in the context of relationships, our relationships suffer as a result because we approach those relationships from a place of woundedness, from a place of pain and suffering or misery or frustration. Instead of a place of healing and wholeness and embracing our uniqueness or our hachiatos. And the whole reason why I place this integration of spirituality and mental health in relationships is because it's kind of like life's irony as I see it. Because on one hand, we often receive our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, even spiritual wounds in and through relationships. And yet, we can discover our greatest healing. We can discover our deepest strength. We can discover our most profound peace and a depth of forgiveness and love through healthier relationships. But relationships, you know, is certainly the key because we are relational beings. And these relationships just might be within our own families or coworkers, you know, colleagues or even friends. However, whenever we find that healing in our lives, we find that we're being transformed. And when we do that, we also transform others by our presence, our grace, and our understanding, because we are relating to ourselves and to others in a totally different manner. But first, forgiveness, kindness, and compassion begins with how we certainly treat ourselves. Because whenever we're compassionate with ourselves, we then can become more compassionate with others. And whenever we are able to be forgiving of ourselves or with ourselves, we then can be more forgiving with others. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves, we then discover how this opens our hearts to see and live in gratitude with others. So transformation, first and foremost, begins with us. Well, you know, I don't know if I've shared that this with the audience, but it was a couple of weeks ago, some friends and I were just sitting around, and one of them just tossed out this question of, well, if you had a chance to go back and do it all over again with what you know, and, you know, would you make the same decisions, or, you know, did you want to do things differently? And, immediately I just wanted to say, oh, yeah, sure. of course I'd want to do it differently. I'd do all the things that spared me the pain and other shortcomings I had, or, you know, just how life turned out and all that. And then before I gave that answer, I just did a quick check-in with myself, and I realized that, no, I would not want to go back and do things differently. I would want to do things the same way, because think of it this way. In doing things the way we have always done, you know, whether it be the choices we have made, decisions, how our life unfolded and so forth, it could have been filled with misery or pain or suffering. And just wonder, you know, how those experiences have in some way brought about healing in our lives, and certainly in my life as well, because it has taught me something about myself, my resiliency. It has opened my eyes and my heart to be more compassionate and kind and forgiving. And just really, really, I am just truly grateful for how every decision and everything that I have done has brought me to where I am today. And so that is something that I would not want to trade at all, because, again, what I have gained is far, far, far more than what I think I have lost. Well, I hope your heart is well today. I hope that you are well today, too. And if you are struggling today, I pray that you find rest and comfort and the peace that you need. So, on to another topic. I hope that everybody out there is drinking plenty of water, you know, especially no matter where you are, summer months and so forth. Our doctors tell us that we need to drink at least eight-ounce glasses of water every day. So that's roughly, comes out to be roughly a 2-liter. And of course, if you're outside in this heat, then you will probably need to drink at least a gallon of water and then some a day, depending on your activity. Now, there are all sorts of water bottles out there and thermoses, thermos-type devices, to carry our water in. And it's become quite fashionable, the different styles and so forth. But let me ask you this. How many fancy plastic water bottles do you own? 2? 6? More than 10? Well, I was curious myself. I went out to my kitchen cabinets earlier this week, and I counted at least 7 different carriers that we have used at various times to take water with us. And and not just that, I mean, we probably have cup holders in our cars that we use to hold water bottles or sodas, or, and if you don't have any water or soda bottles, then a cup holder is a good place to hide, you know, loose change. So, but not many of us would want to buy a car today without some cup holders, whether in the front or the back, especially in the back if you have kids. Now, I say all of this to make this point. How many of us have ever taken the time to really appreciate the water that we drink? Okay? How many times have we really appreciated the water that we drink? Do we appreciate the water that we drink enough to say a prayer before taking a sip, or to offer some form of gratitude? Well, let's be honest. How many times do we take water for granted? Because it's nothing for us to fill up our water bottles and thermoses and, you know, go on our merry way. And we assume that the water we are drinking is pure and clean. Now, this has long been off the front page news, but it's been 6 years since the Flint water crisis made the national news out there in Flint, Michigan. And people are still living without clean water. And when the news broke about the water situation in Flint, many people there were dealing with chronic health effects of, say, lead, bacteria, or other chemicals that were discovered in the water. And the same is true in other states where strip mining or mountaintop removal of coal have left community water supplies just laden with harmful chemicals and people getting sick, and the water is basically unfit to drink. And also, let's not forget that whenever there have been floods or fires or earthquakes, that whenever the rescue workers arrive, the first responders and so forth, they always make sure to have plenty of clean drinking water for the victims of such disasters. And there's something very soothing and refreshing about receiving water when we are thirsty or when we are in distress. It just provides that extra comfort for us, because water is life. It speaks life. It nourishes us, and so forth. Well, this afternoon, I wanted to begin this focus on how the light of water refreshes our soul by reminding us how much we are connected to natural resources, and how just simply living in gratitude opens us up to the awareness of our soul's voice. And for example, let's start things off with this. How many of you have ever read a very specific prayer of St. Francis of Assisi? It is actually a canticle, which is a prayer that is put to music, or it is sung. And the canticle I'm thinking of is the Canticle of Brother Sun and Sister Moon. Okay, it's very special. I'll read a good part of it here for you, but it is very unique, and it's just laden with gratitude for all things. And so Francis writes, "Most high, all powerful, all good Lord, all praise is yours, all glory, all honor, and all blessings. You alone, Most High, do they belong, and no mortal lips are worthy to pronounce your name. Praise be you, my Lord, with all your creatures, especially Sir Brother Sun, who is the day through whom you give us light. And he is beautiful and radiant with great splendor. Of you, Most High, he bears that likeness. Praise be you, my Lord, through Sister Moon and the stars. In the heavens, you have made them bright, precious, and fair. Praise be you, my Lord, through Brothers Wind and Air. And fair and stormy, all weather's moods by which you cherish all that you have made. Praise be you, my Lord, through Sister Water, so useful, humble, precious, and pure. Praise be you, my Lord, through Brother Fire, through whom you light the night, and he is beautiful and playful and robust and strong. And praise be you, my Lord, through our sister Mother Earth, who sustains and governs us, producing varied fruits with colored flowers and herbs." And so on and so on does this canticle go on to just give thanks for the good gifts of creation. And, you know, what makes Francis's Canticle of Creation, there we go, so relevant for us today, is that he placed this prayer, this song, in terms of the gratitude he expressed because of the connection he has with all things. Relationships. I used to tell my students all the time that everything we focus on, whether it is mental, emotional, physical, or spiritual, always brings us back to relationships. And just as we focus on, let's say, the mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual aspects of ourselves, we can also use the elements of earth and wind and fire and water to open us up to a greater connection of who we are as soul. Okay, so for example, let's just entertain this. For example, the earth, it represents grounding, the foundation of life. You know, it also represents substance or a connection to one's life path and even a connection to our family roots. And then there's wind. Wind is air, and it's active and just very strong at times, strong sense. It represents the spirit, the vital breath of the universe. You know, wind is felt in the warm wind of the spring and summer, and it's also felt in the cold wind of autumn and winter. And fire represents energy, a tool of transformation, connection to personal power and inner strength. And from a spiritual perspective, fire represents our passions, compulsion, zeal, creativity, and motivation. And fire also has the characteristics for forging our will and determination. It's our inner light, as well as a living symbol of the divine fire that burns in every soul. And then there's water. Water is also a very powerful element. It's shapeless, odorless, tasteless, vital to our life, and part of a never-ending cycle. Water itself represents emotional release, intuition, and inner reflection. And water is also fluid and adaptable and has much to teach us regarding how we can manage any situation. Back when he was alive, Bruce Lee used to say, "Be like water." In other words, you know, he said, empty your mind, be formless, be shapeless, be like water. You put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. Be like water. And water certainly tests our ability to be fluid and adaptable in any given situation. And water can be very, very strong as well. In fact, let's take another look at just another property of water. It's what I call the silence of water. And if you have ever noticed that water is actually the epitome of silence. I mean, just pour water in a bowl and listen. You'll hear silence. You know, water only makes a sound when it's moving against another surface, such as when we pour water into a glass, or even when we swallow it. Or what about when water is running over rocks or crashing against the shore when the wind creates its waves? And yet, when it's still, this inaudible silence of water communicates how it is filled with life that gives life to all who depend upon it. I know I've mentioned this to this audience before, but there's a great movie that really speaks to this truth, and that is the 2013 film, The Cherokee Word for Water, which followed the work that led Wilma Mankiller to become the first contemporary female chief of the Cherokee Nation, and highly, highly recommend it. Now, for those of you who have not seen the movie is based on a true story of the Bell Waterline Project in Oklahoma, and it was set in the early 1980s in the homes of the rural Oklahoma community, where many Cherokee houses just lacked running water, and, you know, other houses were just a little bit more than just shacks. And to get any kind of water, I believe they had to go down to a school or a library and pump water from a well and just carry the buckets back a mile or two. I mean, it was really, really far. Just that's all the further the water came up. Well, after centuries of being dehumanized and dispossessed of their land and identity, the people of this little Cherokee community no longer felt like they had the power or the control over their lives or the future. Well, that was until the efforts of Wilma Mankiller and Charlie Soap, who helped organize them to build a pipeline where they can now receive clean water. And like I said, if you have never seen this movie, I highly, highly recommend it. Okay. Well, there are many things that we can do to remind ourselves of the importance of water in our lives, as well as, you know, how can we raise our awareness of the gratitude and how we can express that for being connected to the water. You know, there was a scene, and also, you know, the Cherokee word for water, where there was a time in which they were just hitting one roadblock after another, literally, in trying to get this pipeline down. And, you know, there's just, you know, like, what do we do? What do we do? And since the whole movie focused on water, one of the wise elders, you know, was asked, can you go and listen to the water? What is the water telling you? And to the average person, going and listening to water doesn't make sense. But this wise elder, Cherokee elder, knew exactly what he needed to do. And so there's a scene where he goes to the source of the water and he sits and he listens and he meditates and he prays and he pours the water out and he listens to the sound that it makes and the splashing and so forth. And over time, he came up with just a great idea of just how to get around these roadblocks and to get more and more people, not from outside the community, but from inside the community, to help in just various ways. And over time, this pipeline was laid according to plans, and they had nice, clean, fresh flowing water. Well, the next time you drink water, I just invite you to meditate on its characteristics of light and the sound that it makes. I mean, again, here's another good, good contemplation. Just understand how the molecular structure of water, okay? In class, we learned it was H2O. Just how that molecular structure gives life to our human breath. It is made up of oxygen and carbon dioxide, so O2 and CO2, okay, and water is H2O, okay? Now, consider how God has breathed life into us and where we feel that breath and that matter and that movement of God in our lives. And to take this understanding one step further, as we swallow water, enter into the silence of just gratitude for its life-giving properties, how it feels, and just following it down as it goes into our stomach, and deeply connect with how the essence of water helps us discover our inner voice so that we can be a voice for those who have no water, let alone those who are unable to speak. Because you see, apart from food, apart from clothing, apart from shelter, the real issues that we cannot afford to live without are hope, love, gratitude, inner peace, and grace. These virtues are the true life-giving gifts that nourish and sustain the soul that far exceeds material possessions. And in the next half hour, I'm going to focus on how ceremonies and rituals contain deeper levels of meaning that succeeding generations need to learn, and they need to learn the relevance that the ceremonies have for them to live in their soul consciousness. So by doing so, nothing is taken for granted in life. Not one breath, not one sip of water, nor one opportunity to bring healing, just bring healing from trauma in another person's life. Everything and everyone are connected. So I would really love to hear your heart on this matter. So again, if you would like to call in, if you've never called in, I invite you to do so today. That number is 800-627-6008. I believe it's 888-627-6008. Sorry about that. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I am your host, Dr. James Howe. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Thank you. Okay, welcome back. I am Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, just a quick word about next week's show. I'm going to take a deeper look at the five languages of love. The five languages of love. This is a well-known book that came out, I believe, in around 1992. And it's in a pretty straightforward way. It lays out the different characteristics in which we express and receive love. It's a very, very popular book. You know, I invite you to Google it. You know, it's fascinating. But next week, I'm going to talk about the ways in which we can transform love into understanding the higher dimensions of how love connects us to ourselves and to one another. Okay, so tune in next week, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for The Alchemy of Love That Speaks to All. Well, again, earlier in the show, I was talking about how the light, L-I-G-H-T, of water refreshes the soul by reminding us how much we are connected to the natural resources and how living in gratitude opens us up to the awareness of our soul's voice. And I'm always recommending books here on this show, and just a nice book to add to your collection, if you don't already have it, is a book that's entitled Water, Wind, Earth, and Fire. Okay, and it's Praying with the Elements. So it is Water, Wind, Earth, and Fire, Praying with the Elements by Christine Painter. And in her book, she has many different quotes on different aspects of water, wind, earth, and fire, but it also teaches us how to pray with the elements and to offer different ceremonies. I just want to read a section of her book so you get the idea. And this is in the chapter on Sister Water. And she writes, "The element of water is often associated with the direction of the west and the season of autumn. The west is the place of the setting of the sun, the ending of the day, and the transition into a time of darkness. It is a time to recognize our own limitations and frailty. Autumn is a season of letting go of what no longer serves us in preparation for the fallow time of winter. Dusk is a threshold time, a time of transitions. The rising and falling of the tides connects us to the movement and transition space of evening. And human life itself begins in a watery womb. We spend our first 9 months of life in water and then emerge from this warm, dark brine into the world. The waters break open when birth is impending. And in the first creation story in Genesis, the waters existed before the light, and the rest of creation emerged from that water. Water is essential to life. It pulses through our veins, making up 70% of the earth's surface, and it also makes up 60% of our bodies. And the beating of our blood echoes the rise and fall of our breathing. The great rhythms and the tides and the ebbing and flowing of the seas, great daily cycles that reflect the moon's phases. And we encounter water in many different forms. The ocean, the lake, a fountain, river, rain, pool, puddle, and even tears. Water is malleable, appearing in different forms such as steam, liquid, and ice. And for ancient people, the sea was a place of great mystery and unending horizons. And Psalm 104 proclaims, "Look at the sea, great and wide. It teems with countless beings, living things both large and small." And water is also a dominant symbol in religious practice. Ritual bathing and hand washing for purification have a place in many traditions. And in Christianity, the font of holy water is the place of baptism and initiation into community. The priest or the pastor washes his hands as the Eucharist prayer begins and drops a splash of water to mingle with the wine. In the Jewish tradition, the mikveh is the holy bath, the place of purification and renewal. And on Sabbath night, a bowl and a pitcher of water is passed around the table as a part of the prayer so that the participants can wash themselves clean as a way of entering in to this sacred time. Okay. And so that's just an excerpt from this book, Water, Wind, Earth, and Fire, Praying with the Elements. And, you know, it's not just on hot days where we need to be reminded to drink plenty of water, but also those of you who do any kind of energy work, we have to be reminded to drink lots of water. Because energy work on any kind of level can dehydrate us faster than what we realize. Because water holds the light, it is often said that in drinking water, we are drinking liquid light. So for people who are giving physical massages, drink plenty of water. People who offer Reiki sessions, drink plenty of water. People who do therapy work or any kind of, you know, talk therapy or counseling, drink lots of water because, you know, in all of these situations and more, you are moving through energy fields and dimensions whereby you'll need to drink water to help process any shifts that may have occurred. Okay. And the same is true for people who have had some energy work done. You know, to also drink water to process these energy shifts that have occurred in you. Even if you're getting a massage or relaxation treatment, drink lots of water to replenish that which is being processed in and through you. And that's just good common sense whenever we do a lot of energy work, especially, you know, for those who are involved in any kind of like counseling therapy or clinical counseling therapy. I always recommend to my clients, it's like, okay, you know, as we do this work, make sure you are drinking lots of water. Make sure you pay attention to your dreams and so forth. Because as people begin talking, they, you know, can become aware of other things in their life and really expending a lot of energy in just working through perceptions or behaviors or other things that just might be troubling for them. And they usually come back, you know, the next session or so or a week or two, and they say, you know, I just never realized how fast I was becoming dehydrated. And it's like, yeah, because the spirit, the soul, and water are just strongly connected. Okay. So if you're doing any kind of energy work out there, whether you're giving or receiving, please drink lots of water just to, again, continue the processing that's going on because water does hold the light. And it is often said that drinking water, you're drinking that liquid light. Well, Tiwa Native American teacher, mystic, and artist Joseph Rael, or Beautiful Painted Arrow, he notes the value of working with all of the elements and resources and involving them in ceremony, very specific ceremonies, to remember our connectedness in and through all relationships. And he actually says, I'm going to read a section of you from his book, Sound, Native Teachings and Visionary Art. He says this regarding ceremonies. He says, indeed, there is a power that every human being has that cannot be cultivated by reading and writing. We must do something with our physical bodies and natural elements of the land, the fire, water, air, minerals, and wood. Native American ceremonies, some of which are very ancient, and many of the societies that Indians have are based on this intention, to reconnect over and over and over to the land. When we keep connected with the land, that's how we keep our power. We find life empty and unsatisfying because we do not involve ourselves in ceremony. But it is encoded in our physical makeup by virtue of the fact that we have eyes and ears and mouths and noses and legs, that we are here to be catalyst and to connect the physical with the spiritual. And ceremony is how we do this. Actually, in a sense, everything we do is ceremony, whether we mean it that way or not. But ceremony is so much more powerful if we do it intentionally. Ceremonies we do intentionally focus our energies on certain acts and lift us into states of expanded consciousness through which we are literally drinking light. We are drinking inspiration from all the heavens and connecting the above realms with the physical plane. And this is what we come into physical form to do. And we are nurtured by doing it. And if we do not have enough ceremony in our lives, pretty soon we feel empty, sad, and dispirited. We may think we are sad because our physical needs aren't being met or we need more success, but what we are really feeling is the natural hunger of the self for connection with the vast self. And that can only come through ceremony. And ceremonies are most powerful if we do them regularly as a part of a community of people who gather for that purpose. Now, ceremonies can be done alone. In fact, we came into this physical form to express an individual, particular vibration or essence. But really, we are connected with each other and with the vast self, and we need to reconnect regularly because that is our source of our joy, the source of our energy, the source of our enthusiasm, or the zest for life. Ceremonies have to do with chanting, and chanting has to do with sound. Sound has to do with the vibration of the spirit that is in the land. And in ceremony, we are land chanting and we are land dancing. There is a voice that is coming from the land. It wants to tell its story, and this is the time. Now is the time had come for the land to tell its story. So again, I agree 110% with what Joseph Rael is saying here about being in ceremony and how ceremony connects us to not just ourselves, but also one another, but also to the elements that we engage in. To be reminded of how much we are dependent on the earth and how much we are dependent on the wind, how much we are dependent on fire, how much we are dependent on water. I have never quite understood the people who would just willingly pollute and just lay waste to our natural resources because there is so much we depend upon them for life. And it's almost as if, you know, you take your food source and you end up destroying it. And then you wonder why you don't have enough food for everybody. Okay. Or you wonder why there isn't enough water or clean drinking water for people and so forth. And, kind of blanking on where I heard this, but there was a comment that I had overheard. I was at a training seminar, and I think the presenter just said it real fast, but it stayed with me. And she made the point that, you know, if you go back through the world wars and what people were fighting over, and even in the most recent wars, you know, people will fight over natural resources. You know, such as like oil or gas or territory or land or something. And she said it wouldn't surprise her if the next world war is over who controls the water. And it's just something to think about. I mean, it is a precious commodity. It's a resource. And it's one that we truly need to take care of. And so to be in ceremony with water is something that we need to do just to raise our awareness, just to, to have that understanding of just how connected we are with these elements. Because whenever we're reminded of our connection with the elements, we experience a transformation on some level. You know, we may not see it right away, but a transformation has occurred. And as a result of being transformed, we are never going to look at life and others the same as we did before, because we're now looking at the world, we're now looking at ourselves, we're now looking at others with an awakened soul. And we discern every experience through the lens of the perspective of heaven. And as a result, you know, all things in our lives undergo a transformation where even work becomes a sense of worshipful service. Well, within every person's journey to seek God, there is a call to ongoing authenticity. In other words, to come as we are with no hidden agendas, like we can hide anything from God or the universe, no false pretenses, just simply who we are. And God has always responded to people who worship God with hearts that are truthful and spirits that are broken and just crying out for God's presence. And this type of act of worship flows naturally out of the heartfelt desire to know God and to dwell in that holy presence. And it is this desire that also compels us to be genuine and authentic in our relationships. Indeed, worship is at the essence of the response of a heart that is earnestly striving and crying out after the heart of God. Worship flows out of that deep, wrenching hunger and thirst to know who is God. And not only to know God, but to dwell in God, to dwell in God's presence. And indeed, our transformation ultimately encourages us to recognize our own capacity for relatedness. And so, you know, this psycho-spiritual transformation, as it were, is an ongoing process by which God's character saturates a person in their thoughts and behaviors and styles of relating with ourselves and others and even with God. So let's return again to Christine Painter's analogy of water in her book that's focusing on something she mentioned earlier, and that is our tears. And it's just something, again, we take for granted that, you know, we have tears, but why? Why do they show up with certain emotions? And what's the purpose of our tears and so forth? But have we ever considered the connection that we have with our tears? Because, after all, it is water. Is it not? Okay. So I'm just going to read her last section here on Sister Water. She says, scientists categorize the kinds of tears we cry both according to their purpose and to their chemical makeup. Basal tears are the tears that flow continuously to keep our eyes moist. Reflex tears are those tears that occur when something gets into our eyes and needs to be flushed out. Psychic tears, those that arise from an emotional response, have an entirely different chemical composition. They contain significantly more proteins, potassium, manganese, as well as hormones connected to our emotional state. And there are some scientists who hypothesize that through the act of crying, we are eliminating hormones and proteins that generate the feelings that have created sadness, per se, in the first place. Because there is a cleansing and a renewing power to crying. Tears of compunction are those moments we cry with sorrow over our own woundedness and move us closer to the God who is the great healer of all. And beauty and moments of grace also move us to tears. And the saints described all of these as the grace of tears, a kind of living water that streams from our eyes in response to the most powerful moments in our lives. And that is a very, very beautiful way to put it. But I doubt many of us are, in our awareness of water, are also that tuned in to looking at our tears as water, as those streams that point to something greater in ourselves. And water is a very, very powerful element. That's what I've been talking about throughout this show. Very powerful indeed. It is a strong element to begin with, but it also has its place in nurturing us. And as Joseph Rael said, when we are in ceremony, it's as if we are drinking liquid light. It is as just we are drinking that light. And so of the ceremonies that I have participated in, different fire ceremonies and different dance ceremonies and sweat lodges and things like that, certainly, you know, one has to drink water afterwards, not to just replenish what was sweated out of you, but also it is a way to take the metaphor of drinking light, literally, and to drink the water and to continue either flushing out one's system or to continue the process of the, emotional shifts that have occurred. So invite you to always drink plenty of water and always to look, you know, in different ways to be in ceremony with water itself. I know some people, just like the stillness of water. And so there are times when they would fill a bowl of water and then just sit with that water and just meditate on that and just allow that to be their focal point. You know, much in the same way that people who would light a candle and then just gently focus on the flame. Okay. So again, whatever you can find in water to use in ceremony, just invite you to do that. Okay. A lot of people also find tremendous, tremendous peace just sitting beside a river. And just allow the gentle flowing of the water that goes by to just create a sense of peace or a sense of focus or a sense of a washing away of one's worries and then being reconnected to that and just, you know, offering prayers of gratitude. And some people find that going to the beach and just sitting by the ocean on the shore, that gives them a sense, a tremendous sense of just a calm meditation as they are listening to the waves crashing over and over again, mixing with the wind and the land and so forth. Okay. So again, I just encourage you to find your own ceremony with water, but to begin with a glass of water and not to take every sip of water for granted, or any sip of water, I should say, for granted. I know it's something that we here in Western societies and so forth, or then some, I should say, we do. We take it for granted. We can just go to the sink and open up the spigot, and there we have water. Or, you know, how many water bottles do we buy at a time, or purification systems and so forth. You know, it's just something we take for granted that water will always be there. And yet it's whenever we're in ceremony with elements of, let's say, water, that it slows us down and helps us to really appreciate what we have and listen for the deeper level teachings that are going on and how water can actually speak to us and remind us to live in gratitude always. Well, one of my favorite analogies in Scripture is, I think it was a teaching of Jesus to his disciples that went something like this, that whenever you give a cup of cold water in my name to one who is thirsty, this makes all of heaven rejoice. You know, and I just get this image, this wonderful image of all of heaven is just singing and shouting and just marvel at that teaching. Because if a single cup of cold water given with a pure intention of love and gratitude and grace, imagine how heaven reacts when we show other aspects of kindness, love, gratitude, and grace. I imagine the angels are doing backflips in heaven. And so let us always look to provide, that need in somebody. and help them through ceremonies to drink in the liquid light that connects us to the land, that connects us to the water, that connects us to the fire, that connects us to the air. For we all have come from the Creator's hand, and therefore we all are dependent upon all things for our physical health, our emotional health, psychological health, and our spiritual health. Those connections are very real, and we would certainly be wise to reinforce those connections, to be in ceremony and to highlight those connections and to celebrate those connections and to teach others about the connections that we have and not just simply take them for granted, but to especially teach the younger generations who need to be aware of this, who need to know the connections that they have. And I've always tried to share with the kids that I counsel that there is so much more to them than what they ever realize, and just how everybody who's come from them, more than just, let's say, Ancestry.com can prove, but, you know, that their ancestors and great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents are very much a part of them. And, of course, they always say, well, how is that possible? I never met them. And I said, well, the next time you cut yourself, look at your blood. They are all right in there with the DNA because it's been passed down over many, 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 many generations. And you're connected to them. You're surrounded with them. And they're actually looking to you, you know, and seeing how you live your life. And they want you to live in gratitude and to learn from your mistakes and to truly, truly love yourself for who you are. So that's the hope that they hold out for you. And like I said, you know, earlier on, it's like we, you know, can live a few moments without oxygen, or we, you know, can go a few days without food and, you know, a few days without water. But what we really cannot afford to live without are hope, love, gratitude, inner peace, and grace. Because these virtues are the true life-giving gifts that nourish and sustain our soul that far exceeds material possessions. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I invite you to tune in next week when there will be another theme that we're going to be taking a look at, looking at the five languages of love and how this actually can be very transformative in our lives. So tune in next Friday afternoon, 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time and noon Pacific Time. But in the meantime, may you really contemplate how water just brings that healing in your life and share a glass with somebody else and just share that connection and that gratitude together. So in the meantime, everybody be safe out there, behave yourselves, and may God always hold you in the palm, directly in the palm of God's hands. Take care.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific Time on PBS Radio TV.